Hey guys, my name is Sabir Bharti. A very warm welcome to another episode of the Sabir Bharti Show, the place where I interview interesting people with interesting perspectives. My guest today is William Allen, that's spelt W-I-L-L-I-A-M, Allen spelt A-L-L-E-N, on Twitter at the sensitive MA1. And William Allen's website, which is thesensitiveman.com. I will, of course, also include William Allen's other social media links in both the YouTube and the audio podcast episode description. During his successful managerial career, working with American financial services company Wells Fargo, William Allen often led teams consisting of highly intelligent and highly sensitive individuals. William also describes himself as a highly sensitive man and found managing people with similar traits a rewarding experience. So much so, in fact, he received prestigious corporate awards for his empathetic management style. Soon after retiring early from his corporate job, his curiosity for sensitive traits in males grew. Today, William Allen is on a mission to shed more light on highly sensitive males and believes they play an important role in our society. A really, really interesting topic to get stuck into today. So a very warm welcome to William Allen. Hello.
Hi, Sabir. Good to be here with you.
Thank you so much for taking the time for this conversation. As I mentioned to you off air before we began, I've been really looking forward to this conversation over the past week or so. And yeah, just super excited to get this conversation going. I actually wanted to start off by talking a bit about your personal life, because I know that you are someone who has a very special relationship with the outdoors. You love being in nature. And in this regard, there is one place in the United States which you hold very dear to your heart. So what I wanted to ask you was, why is Central Oregon so special to you?
Well, first of all, it's a very beautiful place. And I have a kind of a natural draw to mountains and forests. I don't know what it is. Some people like the ocean. Some people like different locales and so forth. I am really drawn to mountains. I don't know what it is. I've always wanted to live in a mountain town, and I did there, lived there for probably 5-6 years. All my kids live there now. And I'm hoping someday in the near future, I'll be able to get back there and live again. But what was really nice about it was unique is the fact that to the west of where I live, the town I lived in, Bend, Oregon, there are these beautiful volcanic peaks. There's seven of them that go right next to each other. And it's not like a normal mountain range because they're kind of independent of each other. And they tend to hold the snow until, you know, sometimes early in the summer. So it's very spiritual. They just kind of stand out of the ground. And it's just kind of magical to be able to be around them. And then they're surrounded by these beautiful Douglas fir forests, with waterfalls and rivers and so forth and so on. So it has all of the elements to me that spell out relaxation, comfort, getting connected, getting grounded to nature. And I love doing hikes and getting out there and, you know, doing a picnic lunch by a waterfall and just listening to the water and so forth. It's very soothing to me. And I think that's very true for many people who have this personality characteristic that I have, sensory processing sensitivity. It's a kind of a grounding experience for us to be out in nature. So that's one of the reasons why I loved it so much.
Sure. No, thanks so much for sharing that. And I understand you're now based in Florida. So do you ever get the chance to go back and visit Oregon?
I was there this summer, first of the summer. My son was graduating from college, and I went to see his new son, which is my grandson. So that was kind of exciting, and saw my daughter and her children as well. I'm planning to go back in about 3 weeks and visit again for a couple of days, and I'm looking forward to that. So I try to get back as often as I can, but hopefully at some point in the near future, I'll be able to go back and stay for permanently.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm so glad that you get the chance. You still get the chance to visit every so often. I actually, before we started the conversation over the last few days, because I knew Central Oregon was so important to you. It's the first time I started researching into the area, actually, and was actually completely blown away by the stunning imagery of the place. And yes, as you said, it is very picturesque, and the mountainous ranges is simply stunning. So I can only begin to imagine how beautiful it is to see the place in person. So you're very lucky, actually, to be able to go back and visit every so often. Thank you again for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. It is gorgeous. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, your mission is to shed more light on the sensitivity trait within males, within men. What I wanted to ask you was, in your opinion, why does sensitivity within men need to be discussed more? And what do you feel is being missed out on by not talking about it?
Well, as I was writing my book, and of course, as I wrote the blog, one of the things that is difficult for highly sensitive men, and again, maybe I should give you a sort of a foundation about what sensitivity is. It's not typically what people think it is. It's a temperament trait that is inherited. About 60-70% of it is attributable to genetics. The other 30% is to environment, how you're raised, and that kind of thing. But it is a characteristic that has four main characteristics to it, and that is can be explained using the acronym DOES, D-O-E-S. The D stands for depth of processing. People who have this type of sensitivity are very much deep thinkers. They process information at a very deep level. You think of it kind of like being philosophers about everything that comes into their purview and in what they register. So they're very deep thinking, deep feeling individuals. Makes them good problem solvers. It also makes them the kind of people that see connections that a lot of people don't see. So creativity is kind of one of the things that's an offshoot of that. You see a lot of creative people have this personality trait. The second is overwhelmed. They have a tendency to be overstimulated because the sensory information comes in and is not as filtered out as it is for most of the other population. Now, this personality trait is about 25% of the human population. So we're talking about 2 billion people or so. But the other 80% are less affected by sensory information. So I like to think of it as like an aperture on a camera. It's more open. And so as it's more open, it's less filtered. And so they get a lot more sensory data. That means very often they get overstimulated and the required downtime. That's where going out in nature pays off. Going out and being by yourself, being able to meditate, being able to commune with, you know, these sounds of nature, be grounded. That's really important. The third characteristic represented by the letter E is emotional reactivity. They're much more emotional. This is what most people think of when they think of sensitive people, is that they're just very emotional. Well, we process emotions at a much deeper level. We fall in love more deeply. We are hurt more easily, that kind of thing. That's kind of the way our brains are wired. The other side of the coin on that letter E is the idea that we're also very empathetic people. We care about what happens. We have the capacity to sense what other people are feeling and so forth, not in a magical way, but in a way that we're more in tune with that because we're aware, we pay attention to those kind of signals and cues that people give us. And finally, the last thing is this letter S, which stands for, I call it sensory acuity. Dr. Elaine Aaron, who is kind of the person who discovered this trait and has written extensively about it, calls it sensing the subtle in the environment. And that means that we have the capacity to sense things that other people miss. I always use this analogy about taking a sensory processing sensitivity individual to a party, you know, and they're the ones that taste the saltiness in the hors d'oeuvres. They're too salty, or there's too, music's too loud. Somebody's wearing a perfume that's too strong, that kind of thing. They're the ones who pick that kind of stuff up. And that's picking up those subtle cues that are in the environment. So those four characteristics are the science-based, evidence-based attributes that we assign to the people who we call highly sensitive. It isn't about being weak. It isn't a dysfunction. It's not a disorder. It is just the way our brains are wired. And nature, according to Dr. Aaron, has baked this in to the population for a evolutionary reason. We are the cautious, thoughtful, wise counselor type individuals to the rest of the 80% of the population. You need to have that to balance some of the other aspects that are people in the 80% that are not considered highly sensitive. Move forward, do things, maybe more impulsive, maybe more risk-taking. And you need a cautious group to say, maybe you ought to think about it. So that's kind of what nature's baked into it. So back to your question about why do we need to talk about this with men? Well, if you think about all the attributes we assign to masculinity, all those characteristics don't really fit in very nicely with that. And the idea that men being sensitive, which we typically attribute to females being sensitive, emotional, and so forth, and being able to pick up things, subtle cues, that kind of stuff, that's kind of not a characteristic that most men kind of associate with being a man. So the thing that I advocate here is the idea that we, all of us, both male and female, have attributes of the opposite sex. So there's a feminine side to every man. There's a masculine side to every woman. And where we need to continue to talk about this is this idea of, and you hear a lot about toxic masculinity and hegemonic masculinity and the patriarchy and all that stuff. There's a whole generation, probably folks in your generation and even younger, who are saying, you know, that's not working for us, this business about being a man this way. And I happen to think that highly sensitive men, if they can understand the trait better and embrace the trait, can be great advocates for, let's look at how we define masculine. Let's look at it a different way. So I know that's a lot, one big bundle there, but I wanted to make sure that your audience understood what sensitivity was. And I'm not just talking about guys that are get teary-eyed at certain movies and that kind of stuff, although that happens. It's more than that. It's much greater than that.
Yeah. No, that's really fascinating. And thank you for going so in depth with that response. And the reason I say it's so fascinating is because leading up to our conversation, actually, ever since we connected and you shared your work that you do today, it made me think about myself, because I've often been pondering about this more over the last, I'd say, 3 to 6 months, actually.
Right.
How I do find myself to often get quite emotional very easily. I get triggered very easily. Now, as you just mentioned, in things like movies, or I could perhaps read something that's triggered me, or I've listened to certain lyrics in a song. And I find that when I get triggered, one, I get triggered very quickly, and the extent of the emotion that I feel is very high, to the point where I wouldn't say it's uncontrollable emotion, but to the extent where I can, even by myself, shed tears as a result of being moved. And what you said earlier on, that it's not so much about being moved by stories or movies, there's a deeper level. And that also got me thinking while you were responding just a few minutes ago, that I seem to also, and I didn't realize this until you said it, actually, I think I'm someone who tends to go all in with emotion. That could be even in a relationship, for example.
Exactly.
If I'm dating someone, I tend to go all in if I like the person, even at an early stage. So what I wanted to ask you as a follow-up to that was, from your experience of working with sensitive males, can that be detrimental in the long run, or should one just accept the situation for what it is? And if the latter, are there any particular lessons that you can give to help one through that process?
Yeah. Well, culturally, I could see where someone might think that that is detrimental, that's why this whole idea of highly sensitive men and the definitions of traditional masculinity are so overlapping and pertinent to today. Okay. Personally, I don't think, and all the studies are showing that some of the biggest problems in men's health is their lack of ability to show emotion, to express their feelings, to ask for help, to show any type of vulnerability. Mm. That's not a good thing. In fact, the opposite is true, is that if they were able to express emotion more openly, right? And everybody's got their degree because everybody has a certain amount of social conditioning about what's acceptable in your culture and your society, right? But the idea is that to be not be able to do that is to deny a piece of your own humanity, in my opinion. That's why I say that we talk about redefining masculinity, we redefine what feminine aspects are out there and what that means. The idea is, why don't we focus more on being a human being? And being human means that you are built with the capacity for emotions. Emotions drive behavior. And that's one of the key things about human beings that is very important to our survival. So I don't think it's detrimental at all. And in fact, I think it's good to start showing men that it's okay to be emotional about things. It's okay to share your feelings about this. Now, this is a continuing evolution that's been going on for years now. Of course, in the 60s and 70s, you had the feminist movement was getting ramped up again and was starting to advocate for equality for females and, you know, the ability to be able to do different things and broaden their horizons and so forth. There were kind of fits and starts about a male movement. You know, there were things that were out there where men were getting back together in a kind of a tribal way, you know, around the campfire, that kind of stuff. And there was some movement to get men to start expressing emotions a little bit to other men, which is a very difficult thing for men to do. It's hard enough to express, but typically men, if they're going to express emotions at a very intimate level, they do it with a partner, they're typically their spouse or girlfriend or whoever their partner may be. And it's much more difficult to do it around a bunch of men. So I think we need to start thinking about reframing what men are allowed to do. And I think I'm starting to see this, and I'm so glad to see this in younger generations. I'm a baby boomer. I'm in my late 60s. So my generation we still have some of the old ways built into us. But I see a younger generation of men who are saying, I want to do something differently. And now, especially with this whole idea of gender fluidity, you know, people are starting to say, what does it really mean to be a man? What does it really mean to be a woman, right? All those questions are coming up, and I think is kind of paving the way for highly sensitive men to say, sort of come out of the closet, if you will, admit that they have a sensitive nature, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, you think about this. Some of the greatest artists, greatest minds, greatest religious figures in the history of the world have been sensitive people. They've been empathetic, kind. You look at what they do, what their actions are, and you'll see that they're sensitive. And I honestly, by your description, you sound to me like you're very much a very sensitive person as well. So, I would continue to look into this and look in and see, explore it a little bit more. That's what I try to encourage you.
Yeah. As I was saying earlier, it's something that I've certainly been contemplating upon and thinking about more so in the last few months. Not necessarily because I was apprehensive or worried about it, but more so because it just created intrigue within myself,
right,
to perhaps try and understand why I may be feeling like this. And it's not the case, I wouldn't say that I feel uncomfortable when I'm in this situation. I actually feel very comfortable being emotional in certain situations because I'm very much a feel person. Even with my work, throughout my career, regardless of which type of position I've been in. I've always based decisions on how I feel in that moment, right, and whether I get a good feeling about whatever project I'm trying to attack and how to attack it. And at the same time, I'm quite a confident and self-assured person in the sense that I'm very confident about the decisions that I make, about the things that I do in life, whether that be professional or personal. But I've also allow myself to acknowledge moments where I do feel open to being emotional. And it's funny, it's hard to describe when I'm by myself in private moments and I feel emotion as a result of watching or listening or hearing something. I actually very much enjoy processing that emotion. I never feel uncomfortable. I actually enjoy whatever I'm watching, listening or hearing if I get emotional. It's hard to describe. Maybe you can understand it being a highly sensitive man yourself. I actually enjoy the entertainment that I'm being exposed to if it makes me emotional. Does that make sense at all?
Absolutely. I wrote a blog article many years ago. It was sort of like about highly sensitive people. And it was sort of like, are we addicted to our emotions, right? And what I'm saying is this, and I don't mean to spell it out as a negative. I'm saying it as a positive, because if we are allowed to express our emotions, then we can feel the depth of those emotions. And it does create biochemical reactions in the body. And sometimes those biochemical reactions are positive. They're good. Endorphins, that kind of thing, dopamine.
Yeah.
You know, those are the kind of things that feel good. And you can get, I won't say addicted to it. Well, a lot of people, let's say for example, people that run as a hobby or run as a sport or way to stay fit, there's a thing called runner's high where they get to a point where their body is just really taxed and they kick endorphins in and there's that high they get from it. A lot of runners do that. My sister's one of those. That I think does that to get that high, that feeling. They also like running and being out and all that, but that high is worth it too. So yes, to be able to be present with your emotions, to experience them and feel them in their full depth is a glorious thing, I think. And even for sad emotions, I mean, to be able to get that out of your system, and that's the reason why you have that capacity to do that, to sort of purge whatever it is that you've got in your system that needs to come out. You're absolutely right. I feel exactly the same way.
Yeah. And one other thing that I forgot to mention is that while I'm very comfortable in that expression of emotion when I'm by myself, I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable being in that state when I'm around people that aren't necessarily close to me. Now, I'm just thinking now about the people who I'd share this with. It'd probably be my mother, who I've spoken to a number of times about this. And she's a psychotherapist by profession, so she understands these type of conversations, which always helps. Sometimes I talk about it with my two brothers, not so much with my father, but outside of kind of my immediate family. It's not something that I share because I don't necessarily feel the need to do so because it's quite a private thing.
Right.
But yeah, it's very interesting. It's got me thinking actually, since you started describing it.
You said your mother was a therapist, correct?
Yes,
so correct. She probably has some understanding of this at some level. She's probably been exposed to it. And there is actually a test you can take. It's very short, 15 minutes maximum, on Elaine Aaron's website, which is hsperson.com, to test and see if you kind of hit over the threshold and are considered to be a highly sensitive person. Right now, it's about the only really good, reliable, scientifically backed test. To kind of let people know, okay, then I am a highly sensitive person based on this test information. Now, they're working on other ones, but right now that's the best way to know.
Sure. Okay. Now, I'll definitely include that website that you mentioned on the YouTube and the audio podcast description, just in case anyone wants to take a look and maybe take the test themselves. William, with your permission, I wanted to switch gears slightly. I believe at the age of 27, you experienced the birth of your first child, and you were blessed with a daughter. And you describe this moment as one that made you become an adult and a man in an instant. How so?
That was a very profound moment for me. I can still remember it, even kind of emotionally remember it. Just a little preface to that. I've been doing some research because I'm working on a book now on masculinity. That's the next book that I'm going to work on. One of the books that I've touched on is this concept of immaturity in males, you know, the kind of boys will be boys kind of thing, and that men very often take some solace in never growing up and facing kind of the reality of adulthood. And that's where I was at 27. I just got married. I had been in and out of college, didn't finish the degree I was hoping I would get, and just kind of drifting in life. And the 9 months prior to the delivery of my daughter, it was a period where you start thinking about things like, okay, well, things are going to change. We're going to have a baby. This is going to be a child. And it was all kind of mental exercise, mostly. But when she was born cesarean because she turned herself around at the last minute. We had to take her out that way. There was a sterile field they created in a screen that was right so that my wife couldn't see over and I couldn't see over. I was sitting beside her. And when the baby was born, they cleaned her up a little bit and then they passed her over the top of that screen. And this was the first time I'd seen my daughter. And they gave the baby to me because my wife was not in a position where she could hold the baby. And I was supposed to hold the baby and show her and, you know, just have some contact with her. The minute I looked at her eyes, the minute I looked at her face, that realization somewhere deep down at my core, it was an emotional realization that this is a little baby that is completely and totally dependent on me. And that it is my responsibility as her parent or father to make sure that she has the things that she needs in life. And it was like, all this was communicating sort of biochemically in my brain, bioelectronically, whatever, that it was just the shift was like a complete shift of attention that said, from now on, you're going to have to grow up. You need to take this responsibility seriously. And thankfully, I did. I went back to school. I got my degree. I improved my position where I was at work. I started that corporate career we talked about at the beginning, started right about that time. And it shifted my life in a profound way. And to this day, in a couple of 3 weeks, it'll be my daughter's 40th birthday. So I tell her every time that you changed my life. I think she doesn't believe it because, you know, she hears it so much. But the truth of the matter is that it did. It changed me forever. And I had two other kids as well, and they've changed me in many ways. But it was that first one, that first realization that I had to grow up, that I had to face responsibility, that I couldn't be, you know, playing around anymore. I had to really be serious about things in life. And it really did change me in a good way.
Sure, for sure. No, thank you for sharing that. And you know, it's amazing. Every time I hear stories similar to what you've just told about people experiencing the birth of their child, especially their first child, it's always a very moving experience for them. And I find hearing these stories extremely moving as well. Now, up to this point in my life, I haven't been blessed with a child yet. But if God has that plan for me, I'm very much looking forward to that experience. So thank you for sharing that. It was extremely moving. Now, a few minutes ago, you did touch on your wonderful work with writing books. And I wanted to just touch base with you on one of the books that you've written, which is Confessions of a Sensitive Man, an unconventional defense of sensitive men. Now, could you give us a short insight into the idea behind this book and why you began writing this particular book?
The book was really kind of a an offshoot of writing the blog. I started writing the blog in 2016, and it was just questions I had. I mean, I had seen other blogs. There weren't a whole lot of, at that time, there weren't a whole lot of blogs about sensitive men. There were a lot of blogs about high sensitivity, but not about men. And the funny thing about it, Sabir, is that I had read Elaine Aaron's book about sensitivity probably around 2005, 2006. It resonated with me. It clicked all the buttons. I said, that's me. But I, as a man, I had a difficult time accepting that. And it's like I said, it's a tough thing to come to. You've been told all your life you're too sensitive, you're too that. So you reject that because you think it's a pejorative thing. So it took me about 10 years before I could sit down and start writing in my thoughts and putting them down. And that's what I did in the blog, to come to terms with this idea that I was a sensitive man. And it was okay. It's a good thing. So when I wrote the book, it was like, I'm going to take as much of that stuff that I had written down, those thoughts, those ideas, those questions, and I want to pretend that I'm writing this book for either my younger self or some version of a younger person out there who might be going through the same experiences that I did. And I used parts of my life as experiences that I had to illustrate that. And the things that I'd learned over the course of my life and the things that I'd read, the research I'd done, et cetera, et cetera. And that's where the book came about. It actually was written. Both books were written at the same time, and it was essentially too long to have one book like that. And I already split them up into two as I was writing them. So save the second one for later. But this first book was the one that I've had so many men come to me and tell me from all over the world. They've told me, you know, this is a book that I understand. You spoke to my heart when you wrote this book. And it's done a lot of good for me because it's validated my experience, but it also helps them validate theirs, that they've had similar experiences, they've had similar issues and struggles, and they've wrestled with the same kind of problems. So that's really the book in a nutshell. It's an experiential book. It was never written to be a psychology book or a textbook that would be used to teach this. It's just an experience. This is a one man's experience on how this happened, and that's what this book was about.
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing that. And for everybody who's watching and listening to this episode, I will include the link to the book that we've just mentioned and all the other social media links, including William Allen's website, which has information about the book. And I'll include the Amazon link to the book as well, where you can purchase, I believe, the Kindle and the paperback edition as well. Just a reminder of that book, it's Confessions of a Sensitive Man, An Unconventional Defense of Sensitive Men. So I will include that in the show description. Thank you again, William, for sharing that. Now, I want to come back to, again, the main topic that we're discussing today, which is, of course, the trait of sensitivity within men. And when we were speaking off air a few days ago over email, you shared with me that from your experience, a lot of men find it difficult to perhaps fully comprehend or fully understand this trait that they have. What would be, say, your number one tip or more than one tip to help men understand this trait a bit better?
Well, I think the very first thing that every sensitive person, including sensitive men, should do is educate themselves about the trait. And the best place to do that is Dr. Elaine Aaron's book. She had written, 30 years ago, and it's still relevant and important today. But there are much more books today that have been written about it from different points of view, different perspectives. There's been a lot more scientific research done about it. So understanding the trait, understanding what it is foundational to accepting the trait within yourself. If you're a man, again, you're likely going to be having some internal conflicts about whether or not you want to tell people you're a sensitive person, or you want to share that, or, you know, sort of come out, if you will, in, as a sensitive man. But the idea is that once you understand what the trait is, and understand that there's nothing wrong with it, and that there are a lot of people in the world that have this trait, it makes it so much easier to accept who you are. When you accept the trait, you're also accepting a part of you. It's not all of you, right? I like to look at it as a trait that helps you view the world. So it's like a prism in which, you know, you see the world through. Every one of us is not the same. Every one of the highly sensitive people is not the same, but we all share this common prism that we view the world at. So first of all, educate yourself. Second, learn to embrace that trait, and in doing so, embrace who you are and accept who you are, love yourself. And thirdly, go out and educate other people about it, because there's something satisfying about doing that, because you're sharing about yourself and about the trait, and you're likely going to help somebody else that is also kind of going through this struggle. And I think one other thing that highly sensitive men can do is model the trait. Highly sensitive people, they're not perfect, and I'm certainly not trying to make them superheroes, but the idea is they're more empathetic because they're wired that way. They tend to be more nurturing. They tend to be more vulnerable and allowing emotions to impact them in such a way. And they're also very creative. They're also very insightful. And you need to start trusting that intuitive side to you as well. A lot of men have a problem with that. It's because we're all taught, you know, you need to be logical. Intuition is something that women do. Intuition is a human characteristic. And so that's part of pulling that unconscious material you have, letting it flow into your conscious awareness, and then be able to use it usefully in some kind of way, to apply, to fix a problem, to create something new, and whatever. So if you do all those things, I think highly sensitive guys will be in a good position to stand up, if you will, for the trait and themselves, and to be able to be better fathers, parents, brothers, sisters, brothers or whatever, to their and their family and so forth. I think it you'll be a lot happier as well.
Sure. Yeah. It's really interesting what you just said there, that often highly sensitive people are often creative. And I've experienced this myself as well, because my background was actually in television. A few years ago, I used to work in television as a producer, working on TV shows and documentaries. And then since I left that position, I started experimenting with different types of work in different roles, detaching myself from the creative environment for a couple of years. And after I had done that, I found myself in a very uncomfortable position where I found myself missing the creative aspect of work, which is why more recently I've come back to more creative projects, such as writing, starting the podcast, because it reminds me of the work that I used to do in television. And I just love putting creative projects together. It's hard to describe the love that I get from doing it. And just coming back to what you were saying earlier, I wonder if it is because of this sensitivity trait that we're talking about. So yeah, it's definitely given me a different lens from which to look at this from, since we've been speaking today and over the last week or so. I just wonder what your thoughts were about that. Is it always the case that highly sensitive people are often creative?
It typically is. And one of the reasons why I think it is because of the fact that you couple, let's say you're making a stew here, you have emotion, the emotional thing that highly sensitive people have, the depth of processing, which makes you think in ways that connects dots that don't necessarily go together from conventional wisdom. And that's like, how do you find a new way to do something? Well, this is the way to do that. And then the intuitive part of the highly sensitive people allows them to draw from this unconscious material, it's things that you've learned throughout your life, things that you've been exposed to, that you've heard, whether it's musically or creatively or read or saw on television or movies, etc. That material stays there. And being more finely tuned to that kind of intuition is another way of adding something new and creative. Now, it doesn't mean all creative people are highly sensitive, and it doesn't mean all highly sensitive people are highly creative, But the recipe is there for highly sensitive people to be creative individuals. And if you think about some of our highly creative people, whether they're, you know, musicians or whether they're actors, whether they're authors or filmmakers or whatever, you see those elements in them very often. And so they do tend to go together quite well.
Sure. Yeah, no, that does make complete sense. Thank you again for sharing that. I wanted to come back to, again, something that we spoke about on email a few days ago, and you were very kind to share with me a lot of information about your personal life and your professional life as well. And we spoke about the biggest lessons that you've learned throughout your life. And I find these type of questions fascinating because it's something that I've been pondering a lot on myself over the last few months. And this is why I love having these discussions with people who are on the show. And you responded with something which I found extremely profound. You said, and this was in response to this particular question, I asked you, what would you say are the biggest lessons you've learned throughout your life? And you said, be authentic, be yourself. Don't be afraid to fail. Love big and be passionate. Life has an expiration date on it. Be human first. First thing, you can only be yourself and be truly authentic. If you don't conform to a norm, then why not be yourself instead? And as I said, I found this to be quite moving, quite profound. Why do you feel it is important to not necessarily always conform to what society tells us to do? Why do you feel there's so much power in finding your own power, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, because you're a unique creature. Every one of us is. You couple of things here. One is the variability of the human genome is enormous. It's almost an infinite potential of creating people that are unique in their own way. You have a unique life experience, which is everything that you've grown from the minute you're born to the minute where you're present. All that life experience has created unique little modules of learning that you have to draw down from. It's almost become a cliche about being authentic. You hear it all the time. Well, you just need to be authentic. You need to be yourself. And I think people tend to look at that as a kind of a cliche now. But the fact of the matter is, and at least in my learning as an older human being, that for the first time in my life since I left corporate work, I'm doing something that I want to do that's me. And I've never been more satisfied, more happy, and feel like I'm on a path again that is my journey, my path. And I can't express to you in words how meaningful that is to do that. It doesn't matter what point of your life you start doing this. If you do it younger, you have more life in which you have been living authentically. But you can do it at my age or even older. It's very important because you have a unique message and a unique contribution to give to the world. And it doesn't have to be profound. You don't have to change the world, but you can change small increments of life around you. And that is profound, in my opinion, collectively. So I think it's very important that we focus on who we are. Now, that requires one thing. You have to get to know who you are. You have to remember that you've been conditioned since childhood to be a certain way by parents, by schools, by culture, by society. May not be who you are, right? And this is where that intuition comes in. If you find that it's not ringing true to you, that if there's something feels wrong about it, or something is not feels like you're in alignment, if you will, that's when you need to start questioning whether or not this is a good path for you. I love the thing that Carlos Castaneda wrote books back in the 60s and 70s about a sort of his spiritual journey that he took with a Native American sorcerer. And one of the things he talked about is following the path with a heart. It's easy to follow any path, but following the path with the heart is the one that you're following your true, authentic self. So if the path doesn't have a heart to it, in other words, you don't feel it, and you're saying yourself you're a very feeling person, you trust your gut and make decisions a lot of times. If it doesn't feel right, then you need to question whether you should be on it, because, you know, if you're young especially, you could be making I won't call it necessarily a mistake, because all life experiences are worthwhile at some extent, but you could be doing a lot more things that align you with who you really are and may have a greater impact on yourself and those people around you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you so much for your wise words. And, you know, I cannot express how excited I was when we initially connected for the first time, and when you shared your work with helping this sensitivity trait within men, helping men understand it better, because it's actually helped me understand better the sensitivity traits that I've been questioning within myself. So thank you for that. And I've really, really enjoyed this conversation today. It was completely unexpected, and it's wonderful how certain connections are made in this world. When you least expect it, you are connected with certain people, and the universe or higher power or whatever you like to call it bring people together to share certain lessons, life lessons and subjects. And honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I cannot thank you enough for coming forward and wanting to share this story. It really has been an amazing conversation. So thank you so much. Before we wrap up, William, and before I remind everybody of how to follow your work, get in touch with you, were there any questions that I perhaps failed to ask? If so, please feel free to mention anything that I may have missed off in my questions, or anything else that you wanted to really mention today.
You know, Saber, you're very thorough in your questions, and the questions were very good questions. I appreciate the fact that you wanted to get to the heart of the person you were interviewing. A lot of times I've done podcasts in the past, and all good podcasts, but I didn't feel necessarily like I was, you know, getting to a personal level. And that's one thing that I think is really important, is to be willing to be vulnerable, especially guys. It doesn't mean you have to break out in tears or whatever, but what it does mean is that you allow yourself to present yourself to the world, that you're not masking things, that you're not covering things up. If something is tender in your heart, then say it, express it, you know, and you'd be surprised how often that honesty really triggers a response that's very positive in another person. And I think that's being authentic and being open. And that's one of those are two things that I think that everyone could benefit from, not just highly sensitive people.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that's an experience that I've, or that's something I've experienced recently, actually. And you're so right, when you are open to being vulnerable, especially in settings like this with a podcast where you're asking questions and the other person responding, when both people are able to be vulnerable, it heightens the level of conversation, certainly from my experience. And I find myself more moved from a conversation like that, when yes, both participants are prepared to kind of go all in, if you like, as we were saying earlier. So yeah, it's been a fascinating conversation. As I said earlier, it's been really moving. I've learned so much, and I hope we can perhaps stay connected. I'm really glad that we connected on this level, and I'm sure I'll keep an eye out, or continue to keep an eye out for your work and your updates on social media. So thank you once again. For everybody who's watching and listening, just a quick reminder of how you can get in touch and stay updated with William Allen's work. Just a reminder of the spelling of his full name. So the first name, William, WILLIAM, and the second name, Allen, spelled ALLEN. On Twitter, you can find William Allen using the handle at the sensitive MA1, that's the number one at the end. and the website for William Allen, which is thesensitiveman.com, which does include details of the book that we discussed earlier, which was, of course, titled Confessions of a Sensitive Man, an Unconventional Defense of Sensitive Men. I will also include all of William Allen's social media links on both the YouTube and the audio podcast episode description, including the Amazon link to that book as well. And the biggest thanks, of course, goes to William Allen. Thank you for taking the time to be on the show. For everyone who's watching and listening, I hope you've enjoyed this very special episode of the Sabir Bharti Show. Until next time, do take care of yourself. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.